Hey team, you're about to experience my interview with Tony Sternberg. Tony is the co-founder and CEO of ProsperStack. ProsperStack is an end-to-end solution for helping to prevent churn of customers from your subscription systems and platforms. They basically sit directly between that unsubscribe function or unsubscribe option in your system and help prevent or help incentivize customers to stay subscribed. They basically help to automate subscription growth and prevent churn. We had a great conversation about where the world of subscriptions is today and how they are helping merchants retain more subscription revenue. Enjoy. This is the E-Commerce Edge podcast with your host, Jason Greenwood. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the podcast. It is my pleasure to welcome Tony Sternberg from ProsperStack to the pod. Welcome, Tony.
Hey, Jason. Thanks for having me on.
Mate, it is so good to have you along for the ride today. And how excited are you to get out of winter there in Minneapolis, Minnesota?
Yeah, we've had one of those weird years where last year was the record-setting snowfall. This year, we've actually been quite warm. Although now we're supposed to get like a late winter this week, we're getting like 6 to 8 inches of snow. We're getting there. We're almost through it.
Yeah. If you choose to live where you live, you better get used to snow. Otherwise, you're probably not going to like life very much. Do you have snowmobiles? Are you into snowmobiling or skiing or snowboarding or anything outdoors. Like that?
Yeah, I'm into outdoors. Typical Minnesotan hockey. So ice skating, snowmobiling, four-wheeling, that kind of stuff. So yeah, we tolerate our winters, but we love our summers up here.
Yeah. And from my understanding, I've never been to Minneapolis, but from my understanding, that 3 months of the year is pretty beautiful.
We do have really nice summers up here, definitely.
Amazing. And how did you come to be in the space? Before we dig into the details, the nitty gritty of what ProsperStack is and does, how the heck did you become embroiled and entangled and ensnared in this e-commerce space? Because if I look across your background, I wouldn't automatically think you're going to get involved in this space.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. My entire, like, I would say first decade of my career was really in just pure SaaS, and it wasn't really focusing on the e-commerce market. It was really more in B2B SaaS. And in launching ProsperStack, I was setting out to serve the SaaS market once again, but it turns out that our ICP very much behaves like a consumer, and in fact can be a consumer, is a consumer. It really helped us cross over as a natural maturation of the product and learning more about e-commerce technologies and having e-commerce companies come to us and say, hey, we want a solution like this. How can we adapt it to our needs? And that's really what led us into this market.
And were you scratching an itch? Because, and again, we'll get into the detail in a moment, but ProsperStack is really almost an adjunct or almost an extension or an enhancement of other SaaS technologies in the subscription, e-commerce subscription space. So it feels like, how did you even identify this use case, or how did you even identify this problem set in the first instance? Were you scratching an itch and you went, hey, I recognize this as a problem because maybe I was using a subscription platform, but it didn't really have a pre-cancellation experience that would help to retain customers. And then maybe you built something for yourself and then you said, hey, let's commercialize this. Or how did you even get the idea for this product?
Yeah, I think it was twofold. And one side of it is my past experience in the SaaS industry. So I was previously at an HR tech company, and we made software for recruitment and staffing agencies. And so from our side of things, we acquired customers in a very like transactional way. So they could come into our website, sign up, pay us, and never have to really talk to us. But so because of that, we didn't have a really great one-on-one relationship with our customers. It was more a volume play, if you will. So when they went to cancel, we felt like we didn't have a good idea as to why they left, didn't have a good pulse on that. And from our own business standpoint, we wanted to have a better understanding of why our customers leave and then also give an opportunity to save them. So to prevent the cancellation where it could be overcome if there was like some misunderstanding or objection that we could solve. And then the flip side of that, as a consumer myself, I would often get frustrated with experiences on cancellation, whether it's like a media company, like a cable company or a gym membership, or just a general subscription product that didn't have a clear path towards cancellation. So we wanted to create a solution that obviously helped the business side of things, but also was fair and just to consumers on their own needs to want to manage their subscriptions and have better control and ease of cancellation.
And were you at all thinking, if I go into this space, I'm recognizing a gap. I'm seeing a gap. I think this UX is terrible and could be 1,000% better. So I'm going to make it 1,000% better. Was there ever a concern or a consideration, hey, what happens if the platforms that we're helping solve this for decide to try to replace us by effectively incorporating our UX into their platform, their product? What happens if they do that? Then is there a reason for us to exist anymore? Were you thinking, geez, they could cannibalize our business if they so desired by trying to improve their own UX and their own platform instead of using us as a stopgap measure, if you will, to fix what is admittedly sometimes a really bad user experience from a cancellation perspective?
Yeah. I think there's some minimal threat of that. And I think the customers that we tend to serve best they're pretty high volume subscription businesses. So even half to 1 to 2 percentage points of improvement in retention can mean a lot of money for their bottom line. And the way that we look at it is that the platforms that, you know, that we're quite honestly partnering with, some of them already have very basic implementation and solutions that we offer, but they don't offer the testing, the segmentation, and the optimization features and strategies that we've learned and incorporated and help consult them through. So really our software tends to pay for itself over that, even adopting over like a solution they might already be paying for. Yeah, I think for certain customers that probably works great. And then when you get to a certain point, I think you need something more. And then that's where we come in.
And let's talk about the problem set specifically. And let's talk about exactly where your platform plugs in, how it works. As I understand it, in full transparency, I haven't ever used ProsperStack yet. However, what I have used and what I have implemented and what I have architected are many subscription solutions for e-commerce. And there's quite a few of them out there. There's Bold, there's Recharge, there's a whole bunch out there that are pretty well known, Chargebee, et cetera. And I've also been part of solution architecture teams that have been designing and building completely custom subscription solutions out there in the market, or taking an off-the-shelf headless solution like a QPilot or again like a Bold, and then custom integrating those into checkout experiences or PDP experiences. And when we think about those, the whole subscription thing is much more complex than most people realize it is, because you have to create the functionality where people can harmonize multiple subscriptions over multiple windows of time. You have to give them on an individual purchase basis the ability to, say, for example, set weekly, monthly, 2 weekly fulfillment based on a number of days or weeks or months. You have to be able to set up pause, resume, cancel, all these things, right? There's a lot to this whole subscription thing. Then you have to have the payments, and you have to tokenize the payment methods, and you have to be able to rebuild them. And there's a lot to it. And the reality is most people, when they're using a really good subscription solution on their favorite e-commerce website, I don't think they're fully aware of just how hard it is to build that solution in a way that is super user-friendly and easy on the front end, but all the complexity is obfuscated away in the back end. But then we have this challenge where, yes, merchants love selling subscriptions because it's predictable revenue, it's predictable sourcing and supply chain. There's just, they can forecast better, they can plan better, they can offer better discounts, they can aggregate orders, they can do all sorts of things that make them more efficient as a business. And therefore, they can increase their conversion rate because it's a guaranteed conversion. They can make sure that customers are getting, instead of having to remember to purchase and maybe running out of something, they can set it up to where the customer never runs out. So there's so many benefits to this. But the one downside is, once your business starts to rely on subscriptions, or maybe you're a subscription-only business, like a BarkBox, or you're some kind of business that's subscription only, like maybe you're a pet food company. And so the only thing you offer is subscriptions. You don't offer one-off sales. These brands that implement this, because it's so complex and because there's a lot to it, they become really reliant on that revenue. They become really reliant on those engagements. They become really reliant on those subscribed customers for their revenue and making sure they retain that relationship. So when it comes time for a customer to potentially cancel, it's at that point that we're trying to prevent them from canceling or incentivize them to not cancel, and to give them such a good experience in the moment that they go, nah, actually, I'm going to keep this going, or I'm just going to pause, or whatever it is I'm going to do. And it's that piece. It is the point at which we will potentially churn a customer off of a subscription model that feels like that is exactly where you come in as the safety net, and you come in like Zorro, and you come riding into the rescue, right?
Yeah, you basically hit the nail on the head. So we do come in at that point of cancellation when the subscription is potentially going to be churned. And we work with all the platforms that you mentioned. So the Bolds, the Shopify's, the Order Grooves, the Recurly's, you name it. We've got dozens of platforms that we've integrated with, and we can augment and basically automate that process for you. So if your customer goes to cancel and they state that it's because they have too much product, and we can say, hey, you don't have to cancel. We can just skip a couple deliveries, whatever it is. We can communicate with that platform on your behalf and automatically affect that subscription for you as it is. So it becomes a really like easily implementation, low code. And then the people that are in charge, the growth teams, whoever might be in charge of this, are able to go in and actually make those changes without having developers come in and make new screens and that kind of stuff. Prosper Stack enables them to test different strategies, measure the results, and really have an impact on the bottom line of revenue in that case.
And so they can A-B test within your platform too, to where they can say, okay, we're going to incentivize someone this way, or we're going to incentivize someone this way. Let's A-B test this and let's see which one retains the most customers.
Yeah, exactly. So we're big proponents of trying to present the right offer to the right person at the right time. And that doesn't mean it's a blanket discount. It doesn't mean it's a blanket skip. We always tie interventions or deflections or offers into the reason people are there to cancel. So we try to find out what their primary motivator is, why they're here, what got them to this point, and then present them with a solution that speaks to that. And then behind the scenes, it's quite a bit more complicated, as you can imagine. We've got a lot of data on how long you've been a customer, how many purchases you've made, that kind of stuff. And we can segment the customers and bring them down different paths based on what their LTV is to you at this point. And there's tons of different things that can inform this process. And then, yeah, once that offer is set up, how do you know that that's the best one? So then we have A-B testing capabilities built in to say we can pit a 1 month skip or a 2 shipment skip versus each other. And then ProsperStack will do all the kind of the math crunching and measurements of it and tell you which one's the most effective that's going to net you the most revenue. So yeah, there's a lot that goes into it, even though it sounds like a simple process on the front end. And A-B testing is a huge part of optimization. And we always look at it as that you're never fully optimized. What worked a year ago doesn't necessarily work today. So you have to constantly be testing your strategies and making sure you're staying up with your customer base and what their needs are.
And what are you finding in your experience, and what does the data say around the most common reasons for wanting to cancel a subscription? And then on the backside of that, what kind of retention rates or recovery rates are you seeing typically on average across your customers that you're able to save for them once they implement your platform and optimize it?
Yeah. And it certainly varies by industry. You know, in the e-commerce industry, being a consumer end user, the save rates can definitely be higher. I would say we shoot for somewhere in the range of 20 to 30% of a save rate of someone that comes in. But it does vary a lot by the type of customer. If you're a higher dollar product versus a lower dollar product, and there's a lot of things that go into it. But I'd say across the board, that's the range that we look to. We have some customers that might be more in the 7-8% range that for them is a huge success. We have others that might be 16-17% that we're really trying to bump up into that 22% range. Yeah, it varies a lot, but I would shoot for that 20-30% range for sure.
And again, what are the most common reasons that people tend to look to cancel? Is it that they don't maybe realize that there's an opportunity to pause or skip? Is it that they maybe want to swap out for a cheaper substitute product because maybe they're feeling the cost of living crunch? And what are you, and of course this evolves over time, but generally speaking, what are you thinking, seeing are the most common reasons that people want to cancel their subscriptions?
Yeah. People cite price as the number one motivator to want to cancel pretty much across the board. And that does vary from time to time, but right now that's what we're seeing the most of. And I think you alluded to it, but people don't understand or realize that there are alternatives at that point. Because you might say, oh, I've got too much of this product. I don't need any more right now. I'm going to go ahead and cancel. And you gloss over. There might be a skip button there. There might not be. But when you come into cancellation, you cite that I can't afford it right now, or I have too much product. Then we can come in and say, hey, how about skipping this next couple? Or then we can say, how about a coupon, a discount for your next few orders, stuff, and something like that. We'll still retain them as a customer and eventually work them back towards getting to that like full price. Again, because we always try to, it's always a sliding scale, the customer realizing the value of your product. And they're, at one point in time, they were happy to pay full price for it. So something changed in their circumstance. And it could be temporary, it could be permanent. But I think your willingness to work with them shows that you sympathize with their situation. And if you offer them an alternative that works for them for that point in time, they're much more likely to stay with you. And then if things improve on their own regard, whether it's an economic hardship or just the fact that they don't need it at this moment and you just can resume it later on, it speaks a lot to your willingness to work with them. And I think you'll win customers longer term that way.
And for those that want to carry on with the cancellation, I'm guessing that your platform also offers a very valuable feedback collection tool that provides a whole lot more insights, data, and maybe some ways in which they can improve their offering. Maybe they can improve their website. Maybe they can improve the UX, whatever it might be. Maybe they can improve their pricing. It feels like you, even if someone continues on with a cancellation, you are a vector of collection for a lot more data than what the typical e-commerce brand would receive when somebody just says, cancel, I'm out.
Yeah, we definitely collect a lot of really interesting analytics. We do language processing over open-ended feedback that we get. So we can tell you if your customers are like favorable towards your brand or negative towards your brand at that point in cancellation, and then correlate that to if they did cancel or didn't, or accepted an offer or didn't. So there's a lot of really interesting data you can drill into. And then, of course, you can break that all out by segment, by product. There's tons of ways to slice and dice the data. We hear a lot of times from customers that, I think I know why my customers cancel, but we don't really have a place to really view that or prove it. So when they go to their board or they go to their leadership and they're like, we need to do this because our customers want this, they're like, where's that data that's showing you that? So I remember in one case, one of our customers basically said, with the data that we were able to collect from ProsperStack, we found out that pricing was our problem, and we were able to make a presentation and case internally that justified the price changes that we wanted to make as a team to our leadership and to our management, and they were super appreciative of that.
So that sentiment analysis goes a long way. And how do you deal with the same kind of thing that we saw evolve in the abandoned cart email flow, where customers started to get wise to this standard trend, and they said, look, I'm going to abandon every single cart because I know that within 15 minutes of me abandoning my cart, I'm going to get a 15% discount coupon in my email. And so we're almost training customers to do the bad behavior, which we then incentivize the right behavior through a discount or whatever it might be. So do you create a randomness component of this to where a certain subset will get incentivized, a certain subset won't, so that we don't want to become predictable as a brand, right? We don't want to be able to be gamed as a brand because we're trying to retain customers, we're trying to retain conversions, we're trying to retain revenue. And ultimately what we're trying to do is we're trying to create super high LTV is what we're trying to do. And anything that works against us in that way, because we become predictable to our customers and we're seen as a soft target, that can have really disastrous consequences. So how do you guys deal with that in the context of incentivization to not churn?
Hey team, I have a big favor to ask you. Please pause this episode and send the link of this episode to someone you know that you think would enjoy this content. Really appreciate you spreading the word. This is how we grow. We're not a Joe Rogan. We don't have big, massive advertising budgets, but we absolutely want to grow. We want to get the learnings from all of these episodes out to as wide of an audience as possible, and we need your help to do it. Thank you, and now back to your listening.
Yeah, and that comes up a lot, especially when we're going through like the sales process or just discovery and learning more about each other's needs. And people are saying, how are we going to ensure that this doesn't get out online, or someone's not going to game us and continually do this? So it's a very valid concern. And hey, guilty party here. When I go buy things online, like I try that stuff too, right? I'll add some to my cart, or I'll look for that like first order promo. And you know that you're going to get something if you didn't buy it. But yeah, so in ProsperStack, we do have measures built in to do that. Number one is, by default, if a subscriber does take an offer, they won't receive one the next time that they come in and cancel, because we don't want to set up a situation where they think they can just repeatedly do that and get the same one. We also have ways where you can bring, let's say that you and I, Tony and Jason, are identical customers. We go through the cancellation flow and we say the same feedback. We say we have too much product and do this. The company itself can set up randomization even within that path that says 80% of the people are going to get this offer and 20% are going to get nothing. So there is a randomization component to that that's fully controllable by the user. And I would say that only once you get into a really high scale is maybe where you have to worry about that. I think everyone has a inherent worry that maybe their community will find out about this, but we have pretty large brands that are monitoring Reddit and things like that. We've never really had it come back to us where that something came out about how to go down a path and get a certain discount. But yes, we have thought about that, and there are ways to mitigate that threat, I would say.
And there is potentially an argument to be made, even in a scenario where, sure, maybe on the fringe, there's an element of gamification that customers could employ if they want to really take the time and the effort and sign up under multiple email addresses and blah, blah, blah. They could probably figure out ways to game the system if they really want to work that hard at it. But I guess that also begs the question, is it a case of you needing to work on pricing? Is it a case of needing to work on your value prop? Is it a case of needing to
make sure that the customer journey that you're creating as part of your normal workflow is so good and the value prop is so high that they go, this is such a good value that it's not worth my time to try to game this further. And so I guess it's potentially, even if a brand thinks they're being gamed, maybe that's just a wake-up call that they probably need to look at some area, other areas of their business model or their customer journey.
Yeah, I think if you start focusing on like ways to, you know, that you're trying too hard to prevent cancellations, or even within that process, you're trying to make sure that too many people, this isn't known, or that too many people are getting an offer, I think you're focusing on the wrong things, right? You're focusing on maybe not what the solution should be. And there's really well-known brands out there. I think that everyone knows if you go to cancel like a LinkedIn, you can, or like a premium membership, you're going to get some kind of offer. And obviously LinkedIn knows what they're doing. They know that everyone knows that and they still do it. So they find that, yeah, that the benefit of that is still outweighing the negative. And yeah, they're not going to over try too much to make sure not everyone can get that offer. I think, yeah, that's a fair way to put it.
And when we think about the tech and how it gets implemented, I'm guessing that you, for the major e-commerce platforms, you're just an app. So you're a Shopify app, maybe a BigCommerce app, a Magento app, whatever it is, you're a plugin app. And then as I see it, probably the more important integrations are with the major subscription platforms. It's making sure that you can intercept that journey flow at the point where they would normally hit the cancellation in a recharge or a bold or whatever it might be, and you're in intercepting that journey. And so you have to be able to then also connect to their APIs. You have to be able to do different things to be able to not only intercept that journey, but make any modifications to an existing subscription on their behalf, if that's the path they choose to go down, so that they don't churn. So talk to me a little bit about the technical aspects of both the implementation and the integration with these other systems that you need to make your system work properly.
Yeah, obviously the huge part of the value prop we provide is really just a low-code/no-code way to get up and running and have a cancellation flow and can affect the subscriptions for you, right? If you don't have to have development teams that have to go build that custom and then good luck trying to get it changed later on, that's where we come in, and the people on the marketing teams, the growth teams, the loyalty teams, they all see the value in that and being able to run their own tests. So yeah, on the front end, the implementation, it does vary a little bit by platform. If your platform is hosting your kind of subscription management page, your customer portal, if you will, oftentimes we can just embed like a piece of JavaScript on that page that is going to basically, when that cancel button gets clicked, then we intercept and we're bringing our UI to the forefront. So that's really boils down to a pretty simple integration at that point. It's usually putting an API key in and then putting that in there. But we also want to get informed with as much data about the customer on the front end as we can, because then we can segment them and even inform what kind of offers they get based on, maybe like I alluded to in the past or previously, was like maybe like purchase history or length of customer, LTV, stuff like that. And a lot of times that is available on the platform, but other times companies store this in data sources outside of that. So we integrate from a technology standpoint, not only with the subscription platforms, but also with like customer data platforms. So like Segments and Klaviyo's and Intercoms and HubSpot, Salesforce, you name it. We do syncing from them to them so that customers can bring as much data into that process and make as much of an informed decision on whether or not we want to offer or change this person's subscription as possible. And that being said, I always recommend we start really simple, right? We try to just take the bare minimum of data, put it in and just get something out there, because something's better than nothing. And then once you start seeing results come in, that's where you want to optimize. You start noticing like, oh, this person's been a customer forever. And maybe we didn't have to give them the same offer as someone who was just a customer for 1 week. And then we can start splitting them out and trying different scenarios after that. But yeah.
And if we were to look out at the future of your platform, is there anything today that your customers are wanting in the platform that you guys don't do yet? Or is there anything that you say, well, look, with our integration with this specific subscription platform, or this is a common use case we don't service today, but we'd like to, what kind of is on your radar to enhance and extend your existing platform?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a ton of things we're really excited about, potential that we could go into. And I think one area that we're diving into now is, like a lot of companies, is how can we apply AI machine learning to our solution and do it in an effective way? And believe me, I'm not one of those people that just wants to say we have AI just for the sake of having AI. You know, I think a lot of people do that. It frustrates me as a user of those softwares, and I want to make sure we don't fall down the same path. But we constantly get asked for what is the best way I can optimize my retention strategy. And a lot of the value we bring to customers is a more of a consultative value, because we have a lot of data about what's working, what's not for other brands too. And they want to know that. And we can get people to a point of optimization much quicker. So one thing that we're looking to in the next quarter to two, and 1 to 2 quarters, is bringing in some more like automatic optimization experiences and using things like AI to generate copy and testing different copy against itself so that we can figure out what the consumer is more likely to respond to. And then taking that a step further and automating the testing of different, maybe it's a discount level. And we could go, we're going to try to find out what's the most effective for you if we want to start at 30% off, 40% off, 50% off. Just because 50% off gets a higher acceptance rate, it might be so much, it might just be a small amount more than like 40%, where that the revenue offset is not worth it for you. So you should really optimize based on the revenue and not just the entire savings. So we're going to be able to introduce automated features where ProsperStack's going to run those in the background for you. And really at that point, what's really great is it really becomes a member of your retention, your loyalty team. And we can, it's already like that. And it really would be another step in that direction of just becoming someone that's working for you constantly behind the scenes, so you don't have to babysit it all the time.
Yeah, I guess this it's this concept of, okay, we've got these playbooks that we know work really well. And this is these are some generic playbooks that we know are going to work for 75% of use cases. But it's that extra 25% of optimization that can move the needle substantially, both in terms of retention of the customer, but also revenue retention. And I think that's really key as well, is not just retaining the customer, but how much revenue did we retain in the first 1, 2, 3 orders after we retained the customer? And what does that look like? And what are the changes that they make to their subscription? Do they decrease the frequency? Do they decrease the volume or the unit count? What are the things that they do? And so I think that bringing the data and reporting mechanisms into the auto optimization workflows, this is where we start to get some exponential improvements in overall performance of the app, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, we have a generic playbook where we're going to get you to a pretty good point of optimization first, but your user is unique to you and they're unlike any other company's users. So we need to try different strategies to figure out what is the most optimal point for your users and your company, to make sure that they have you have the best retention experience possible. And that's what we aim to do, is really help each company arrive to that point of optimization.
And it allows you to personalize the offer down to the individual customer as well. Instead of saying, this is our standard default rule set and it applies to everybody, it's no, actually, we want to treat each one of these customers as a cohort of one. And we want to optimize and improve the likelihood that we're going to be able to retain this individual person and retain as much revenue associated with this person as possible. And so it allows you to personalize at scale in ways that you wouldn't be able to do without AI, right? It connects dots in ways you wouldn't be able to as a human.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And the way that we prompt it, we've tried a lot of different stuff. It's really interesting on what seems to get the best results, but you want to inform it as much about not only the company, but the type of user that's going to be seeing this offer as possible. And it's pretty amazing that what they come up with, or what the AI can come up with. And yeah, like you said, it makes incremental jumps in retention. And then you start piling those up over dozens and dozens of A/B tests pitted against each other. You might end up with a pretty substantial amount of recaptured revenue in the long term.
Love it. And how do you guys make your money in your SaaS platform? How do you charge for your service? Is it a percentage of the revenue that you save? Is it a flat monthly fee? Is it tiered? Like, how do you make your money?
Yeah. So obviously like a SaaS company, B2B SaaS company, it's all subscription based. And the way that we do it currently is based on session volume. So we call a session is basically someone loading a cancellation flow. And typically that's 1-to-1 to how many cancellations you have. There's a little bit of overhead there, but yeah, that's how we're charging. And it becomes a flat, predictable price. And we found that our customers prefer more of a predictable revenue model versus the unknown of revenue sharing. And I think it's a really interesting spot to be in. And I think there's very few solution providers that can actually play in that space. The subscription management companies obviously do, the people that are processing credit cards do, but it's a tough area to get into. Although I do think there's certainly potential for that and an argument to be said that, hey, you could potentially plug in ProsperStack for free and not have to pay us until we're actually recapturing revenue for you. But yeah, for the time being, we do have a flat fee. And we have different tiers of service. If you're a company that's really just up and getting going and you maybe have a couple hundred cancellations a month, 50 cancellations a month, we work with brands all over the place. The feature set that you need and how much A/B testing you need and segmentation you need is going to vary quite a bit from someone who's processing tens of thousands of cancellations a month. So we have different tiers that kind of step up features and price as your needs might change as you get more and more volume of cancellations.
Yeah. And look at, you've got the Grow $200 a month, Prosper $750 a month for 500 plus sessions per month. And then Enterprise obviously is above that. So
it's slightly unclear to me what the difference between Prosper and Enterprise is, because it just says Prosper just says 500 plus sessions a month. So is there a cap at the Prosper tier, which is that middle fat tier? Is there a cap on that before now we tip over into the Enterprise space?
Yeah, I don't think there's not much of a hard cap on it in terms of like how many sessions there are. But the reality is, once people are in the tens of thousands of sessions per month, their needs are generally going to be Enterprise. They're getting into more things like they want SLAs, or they need a certain kind of security reviews, SSO, things like that, that are maybe a little bit more, not as core to the product, but more core to the service and the experience of working with us. And the reality is, as a B2B software company, providing those kind of things is a costly measure. And not everyone wants to pay for it, but for the companies that do need it, they are certainly willing to. And we have to charge enough to cover our costs on that, on providing those services too. So yeah, there's a few more advanced features that are in the Enterprise version too, things like multi-language, some of the things that we talked about earlier, making sure that people are getting like a variance of offers and not everyone's getting the same exact experience. So some of that is on the higher end too. And that really is only necessary when you have a lot of volume. So that's why it's gated that way.
Makes complete sense. And how, I'm guessing that 98-99% of your merchant partners or merchant clients are B2C or D2C merchants. I'm guessing that not many are B2B today. But I tell you, this whole thing of, we don't call it subscriptions usually in the B2B e-commerce world. We call it like an auto ship function. QPilot works very heavily in the B2B space in particular. There's a couple of other subscription platforms that work very heavily with the B2B space. But it feels like you guys are very targeted at B2C and D2C, at least as of now. Yeah?
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair to say, yes.
And do you see, because the growth in B2B e-commerce has just been so astronomical over, particularly during COVID and beyond, and the forecast growth rate is just insane over the next 7-8 years. Is this something, because the B2B world has quite unique needs when it comes to the way subscriptions operate in the B2B world, is this something that you guys are looking at? Any additional tweaks to your functionality that might work best in the B2B world?
Yeah, I think it's a bit unknown. We do serve several markets. We are in the e-commerce market. We are in the SaaS market. We are in the digital media market as well. And I think any core like key changes will just, like a lot of things we do, quite honestly, are driven by our customers, what we're hearing, what the pulse is. If we're getting people coming to our website that we're not providing solutions for now, but we get enough demand for it, that's where we start considering things. And the way that we look at it is, we want to stay across all the different industries we work with. We really do stay true to who our ICP is, and we don't want to like get too far out of that. There's a lot we can do in the space we're in, and we don't want to lose sight of that by becoming too generic. It's high volume subscription businesses that charge moderate price points and need automation to touch their customers, because they have too many customers and they don't make thousands of dollars per customer. So they're not able to justify the human capital cost of having those one-to-one relationships. And that's really the space that we'll play in. If B2B is evolving more into that, then that's probably something we can help with. But I think we're trying to be very cognizant of just staying true to our ICP for now.
Love it. Love it. Niching down is a superpower. You can't be all things to all people, so why even try, right? So if you're servicing your ICP at a high level, then man, that's going to serve you well, especially if you go deep instead of wide. That's always a useful thing to do, especially as a SaaS platform vendor. Now, if people want to get a hold of you and they want to learn more, I'll drop your LinkedIn profile and the Prosper Stack URL into the show notes. But other than that, how do you like people to get a hold of you? Should people just do the trial, like if they run Shopify, you know, plug it in using the Shopify App Store, or how's the best way for them to get their fingers into the Prosper Stack pie?
Yeah, the best way is to really just come to our website, prosperstack.com, and you can from there either just schedule a demo right with us on our calendars, or just shoot an email from the website and just say, here's my situation, here's what I'm looking at, what do I need to know? And we're happy to guide you through it. We know that not everyone's, you know, ready to use a solution like this right now. So if it's just something you're curious for, if not now, for in the future, we're always happy to build those relationships early on and see how we can best help you. And honestly, we learn quite a bit on the customers that we can't serve too. Like you said, it's not trying to be everything for everyone, but it's good to know what the market's asking for. And it's just great to have those conversations and learn more about, especially the e-commerce world, because myself, I'm newer to this space. I haven't been entrenched in this for a decade, like you said. And it's a whole different set of technology, a whole different set of tools than the SaaS side uses. And we're learning more and more about it every day.
And what I love about this, Tony, is that you are a living, breathing example of the fact that when somebody says, oh, all the problems have been solved in the e-commerce world. All the challenges have been solved. All the UX issues have been solved. All the opportunity, there's no more opportunities to create anything new or innovate within this space because it's all been done before and there's nothing new under the sun. I think you are a prime example of saying, look, actually, we could be a tiny sliver of an existing workflow that happens and is managed primarily by an e-commerce platform or an additional plugin or app or extension or enhancement. But we think that there's some inefficiency or an opportunity to improve this over and above what these platforms provide natively out of the box. And I think it is, pardon the pun, it's that out of the box thinking that creates new business opportunities, but ultimately creates a better customer experience off the backside of that. And this is where I think having a creative mind plays a massive role in trying to identify where these tiny little micro friction points are in the customer journey, because most e-commerce brands, they focus on the big stuff, right? They focus on abandoned carts, or they focus on churn customers and stim campaigns, or they focus on increasing LTV. They're focusing on conversion rate, bounce rate. They're focusing on like the biggest levers. They're focusing on the post-purchase journey, the post-purchase order success page. And these are big problems. These are big, grunty, chunky problems to tackle. And that's amazing. And that's why we have CDPs. That's why we have PIMs. That's why we have marketing automation. That's why we've got all these amazing things. That's why we got search, merchant personalization platforms that cost 10 grand a month, because they're solving very large problems. But just because those are big platforms solving big problems, it doesn't mean there isn't still room to solve small but very impactful problems for merchants and customers, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We tell people that we're not the end-all be-all to your retention problems, your churn problems, but we're what we believe is a necessary tool in the toolbox that you need to bring out and have a solution for, because you need to touch the customer at every stage of the life cycle and you don't want to ignore everyone. But like you said, people tend to focus in certain areas that have gotten more attention than ever. But more and more as time goes on, people are figuring out pretty quick, and especially in the subscription model, that money is far better spent dollar for dollar on retention than it is acquisition at this stage. And I think more and more people are realizing that. And that's where we're seeing lots of interest in this kind of solution. Time goes on.
Love it. Love it. Tony, as we come down to the end of our time together, now it's my chance to turn the microphone over to you, my amazing guest. Sure. Let you ask me one question. Any question you like, can be personal or professional. So Tony from ProsperStack, what is your question for me today?
Jason, I couldn't help but notice that you've done a lot of speaking and you've probably gone to a fair amount of events in your day. And just for someone like myself who's newer to the e-commerce space and has a B2B software solution, what are some events, whether online or in person, some really good conferences that you think are a great starting place to go to in this world and just to connect with other vendors, learn more, and just immerse yourself in this space?
I think there's probably two different segments of conferences I would say that would potentially be really helpful for you. SaaStr is probably a really great conference because that's like kind of an epicenter for lots of SaaS platforms to go and share ideas and share challenges. And you're not necessarily going to find new clients there, but certainly to be in the company of your peers where people, because oftentimes it's a lonely journey creating software. It can feel very isolated. It can feel like it's you against the world, and it can feel really challenging and it can feel very lonely at times. And I think being in amongst a group of your peers who are facing similar challenges and have figured out things along the way. It's like I tell merchants, B2C merchants, for example, go to the conferences because you will probably get more out of the merchant roundtables, for example, and sharing stories amongst your peers and what's working, what's not. You're probably going to learn more than anybody that's pontificating from the stage. And I would say it's the same for you. If you're in a community of your peers, then you're going to probably learn more from them and the experiences that they're going through than you could through some software architect somewhere. That's the reality. Sure. And the second thing I think is any of the e-com focused or digitally focused retail conferences, the NRFs, the Shop Talks. You know, you're obviously not at Shop Talk because you're not in Vegas right now, it's happening right now. So I think Shop Talk and NRF's Big Show, I think any of the digital conferences that are focused heavily on e-commerce and digital retail and retail tech, because really you're a retail, I consider you almost a retail tech platform as well. I think that any of those conferences where you're going to be able to get exposed, and you don't necessarily need to have a booth there. You don't necessarily need to spend that 25 or 30 grand on a freaking booth for 3 days. But just paying as a delegate, being able to pay as a delegate to go and listen to people talking about what they're doing, where they're winning, where they're not, potentially having some dialogues with some merchants while you're there, understanding their pain points better and talking to them and learning from them. And it's the opportunity to network for me is the reality is any conference I go to, even the ones I speak at, there's very few things that I could say from the stage or anyone could say from the stage that they couldn't see or hear online on a YouTube video or a podcast or that I've said before. That it's just hard. It's hard to come up with something that's entirely new. But what is almost impossible to replicate is that those networking opportunities to have those quiet, intimate conversations with people over a drink or a bite to eat, that you just can't replicate that online. And that's where the gold dust often is. So that would be my recommendation.
Perfect. No, I love it. And I've definitely heard a couple mention of a few of the ones that you talked about there. So I hope to get out to some of these in the near future.
Are you a B2B or D2C e-commerce merchant? Then head over to greenwoodconsulting.net to learn how we can help you scale your business.